Coming up on The Source, a follow-up on last week's program about being banned from City Hall. The City of San Antonio has told two local residents that they will be arrested if they show up at City Council or in City Hall. Now we hear from the city about that policy with City Attorney Michael Bernard.
It's a very rare event that it happens. We have issued criminal trespass warnings, banning people from city facilities, again, unless they have an appointment or business here.
And more about this banning practice, the American Civil Liberties Union joins the conversation.
This complex of rights in the First Amendment, the ability to petition, the ability to speak your mind, the ability to ask the government for relief, these are so critically important.
And later, how Haven for Hope is helping their homeless clients deal with these freezing nights. That's coming up on The Source, but first, the news.
The Source is made possible in part by a grant from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.
This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Last week, we brought you the story of John Fodderill and Michael Cuellar, two San Antonio citizens and former employees of the city. Separately, the two in their jobs say they found problems with contracts and internal bookkeeping at the city, and both lost their jobs. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about what came next, after they protested, sent emails, letters, and Freedom of Information requests to the city. They became pests at City Hall, and eventually they were told by the SAPD and the city attorney's office that they were not allowed to go to City Hall anymore or even to city council meetings, or else they would be arrested. Here's John Fodderill.
Two policemen came to my house and hand-delivered a criminal trespass warning saying that under threat of arrest, I was not allowed in a city hall, city council meetings, and some other buildings inside the city. I asked them why. They could provide no reason why or any recourse or any hearing. I could get no information at all. They said, we're just supposed to deliver this to you.
During last week's program, we tried repeatedly to get the participation of City Hall. But after the program aired and was posted on our webpage, we were able to get a quick phone interview from City Attorney Michael Bernard, who wanted not to talk about the specifics of John Fodderill and Cuellar's cases, but he was able to talk in general about the policy of the city in regards to banning. San Antonio City Attorney Michael Bernard.
It's a very rare event that it happens. But in general, if the management of the city or department heads in consultation with the police department feel that somebody is a threat to the people who work here or to the citizens who visit here or who's simply carrying on is a threat either physically or just by harassment, then in an instance like that, we will prohibit them from being on city property unless they have an appointment or specific business here.
Does that include, like, you can't go to city council meetings?
We have issued criminal trespass warnings, banning people from city facilities, again, unless they have an appointment or business here. And I'm just going to kind of leave it at that. But it's only happened in instances where people, including the police department, feel that there's a real threat to people who work here or to visitors here.
And there's no, like, judge involved? Like, if I wanted to get a restraining order to keep someone away from me who I thought was a threat to me, I would go to a judge. But you don't do that.
No.
You just decide.
And you could keep people off of your property. I mean, when you say you wouldn't do that, if somebody's a threat to you and were incoming on your property, you could keep them off, as well as your employer could do that and could keep somebody off of the property where you work. You don't need a judge for that. It's just a criminal trespass warning.
But this is City Hall.
Correct.
This is public.
But people work here, and citizens come here, and people have a right to be free from threats or harassment. Everybody has that right.
And not everyone has a right to go to city council.
People have a right to work, and citizens have a right to be in a place where they are not threatened or harassed.
And so when we talk about being able to go to City Hall or being able to go to City Council, and that is not a right that people have, according to you?
Of course people have a right to go to City Council. You bet.
So,
of course they do.
if a person is going to, if you're going to decide that an individual no longer has that right, you don't have a process or a review or an appeal or any way of trying to regulate that?
We don't go to a judge, if that's what you're asking.
Right. Who do you
but
go
if
to?
But if the police department and others fear that, think if they can come to the conclusion that somebody is a threat, that's sufficient for us.
That's all it takes?
That's all it takes, which is a lot. It's happened twice in 7 years since I've been here.
And is this the policy that you think that it's widespread, all cities do it this way?
I suspect that there are a number of cities who, if people think there's a threat, they keep them off their property.
When you say a threat, you mean a person is dangerous, that they are really going to do something terrible, bloodshed.
That's certainly part of it. You betcha.
And
absolutely
so,
right.
But this person has never been charged with a crime before in that regard?
Perhaps not.
And that isn't not part of the equation?
Well, it certainly could be.
But in this case, so, you know.
I'm not talking about any specific cases.
Right.
But in general.
Well, you brought up two cases that have been put on in the last 7 years.
Right.
You opened that door.
Right. Okay.
So let's go through it. And so there has never been, these cases, they haven't been arrested or charged with violent crimes.
A person could certainly get a criminal trespass warning if they were arrested, but it's not a prerequisite.
So the thing that people wonder about is the oversight of this. You know,
I think people wonder mostly about whether they are safe in their working environment and whether they are safe when they come to a public place. I think people are concerned about whether or not they can work in an environment where they're not harassed. They can work in an environment where they know that they are safe to work. I think that's what people wonder about. And that's our duty. That's our obligation. To the people who work here and to the citizens who come here.
Everyone wants to be safe, and we don't want to have anything bad happen. We don't want people harassed. I certainly don't like being harassed either. But, you know, when it comes to banning people from going to City Hall and City Council, shouldn't there be more to it than that? Shouldn't there be some sort of process? Shouldn't there be a judge, possibly, who would grant this order, who would say, this individual is losing their rights? And I need to weigh whether or not this is an actual safety concern?
That's just not part of the law, the criminal trespass law. And so, you know, there's places for that. There's opportunities for that if that's what's necessary. But so far it isn't.
And you don't think that that some people would look at the optics that we have here and say there's opportunity here for abuse?
But I think people would look at the optics and say, we have a right to be safe where we work, and the citizens have the right to be safe when they come to their city facilities. And I think that's the optics.
That was San Antonio City Attorney Michael Bernard addressing concerns about the city's policy of banning select individuals from City Hall and City Council meetings. Now, I'm no expert on civil rights, so I wanted to reach out to someone who is and talk about the rights of the city and city employees versus the rights of citizens. Rebecca Robertson is an attorney for the ACLU of Texas.
Well, I'll tell you the concern that raises for the American Civil Liberties Union. That is a First Amendment concern. I think a lot of us are familiar with our right to free speech, but the First Amendment also protects our right to petition our government for redress of grievances and our right to peaceably assemble. And those are, the Supreme Court has said, really critical components that protect our democracy and protect our ability to make the government answerable to us. So when a court or a city government takes an action that seems to restrict somebody's ability to show up at City Hall and say what they think is wrong, that raises a red flag for me.
Are you familiar with other cities with practices like this?
I haven't heard about this particular practice of just issuing a ban for someone to show up at City Hall, but it isn't uncommon for city governments to take actions, just even passing ordinances, for example, that attempt to put some restrictions on people's First Amendment rights. And a lot of times those things end up being litigated. That's the only way that they end up getting resolved.
The issue isn't whether or not the city can or cannot do this. The issue is whether or not there is a process and that what's happening is fair and it's not just going to be abused where they can just pick out people that they don't like and tell them, you can't come here anymore.
Well, I think there are a couple of issues that you're raising that are very important. One is that our government absolutely has to have fair processes. And when the government takes an action against a person, people need an avenue for challenging that action if they think that it's been unfair. So that's sort of the process question. But then the other issue is the First Amendment one, whether the reasons that the city would give for the action that's taken are so important that they justify limiting somebody's First Amendment rights. You know, I think that if you look at the history of the First Amendment and how it's been interpreted over the course of American history, what you see is the court saying this particular right, this group of rights, are so fundamental to our democracy that government needs a very good reason for doing something that tramples on those rights. So it can't be just an issue of convenience for the government, and it certainly cannot be thinking that a certain kind of speech is disfavored. It needs to be something very, very compelling for the government to take an action that limits somebody's First Amendment right. And you can see why. We don't want to give the government the power to say certain kind of speech is okay and another kind of speech is not. That's something that we protect so that the marketplace of ideas, people can say what is on their minds and can act according to their conscience.
And how do you weigh the rights of the individual to be able to go to city council and speak out and address their grievances or versus the rights of city employees who feel like they're being harassed and they have a freedom not to be harassed?
Well, I don't want to suggest that the government never has the ability to put reasonable restrictions on people's ability to exercise their First Amendment rights. They can put some reasonable restrictions, but those restrictions can't go so far that they prevent people from exercising their First Amendment rights. So a court would have to strike a balance. A court would have to look at, well, what is the interest that the city is saying justifies this action, and is that interest so important that it justifies putting limits on people's First Amendment rights?
What about when they say this is a security or public safety issue? We can't allow these people to be here because that, but they won't give you any other explanation other than that blanket excuse.
Well, it's not uncommon for the government to use security as a reason to put restrictions on people's ability to exercise their rights. You know, here at the American Civil Liberties Union, we always want people to question that kind of justification. It certainly shouldn't be enough to just say it's a security issue. The government needs to be able to show exactly what the security risk is and how this particular restriction that it's using is the least restrictive means necessary to advance that security interest. So it's not enough just to call it security. You have to be able to show that that's the case. And to show that it's a really legitimate concern.
Well, who should have the burden of proof? Should it be on the citizens who were banned? Do they have to prove that they're not a security problem, or should the city have to prove that there is a security issue?
Well, that's a pretty technical legal question, and it would depend on how the case comes before the court. But in general, it's going to be on the government to show that the restriction that it's putting in place is serving a really compelling government interest and that it's doing it in a way that's the least restrictive means necessary to advance that interest.
Is this something that you think that citizens should be aware of, at least locally in San Antonio, that this is a case that impacts all of our rights?
Well, again, I'm not that familiar with the circumstances of this case, but I do think that citizens need to be on guard for whenever you hear about examples of the government trampling on the First Amendment, we all ought to have an immediate reaction to that because this is the most fundamental protection that we have to prevent government from taking away other rights that are important to us. So this complex of rights in the First Amendment, the ability to petition, the ability to speak your mind, the ability to ask the government for relief, These are so critically important that whenever we hear about an instance where the government's attempting to put restrictions, it's something that all of us should be concerned about.
Rebecca Robertson is an attorney for the ACLU of Texas. We're talking about the city banning two residents from City Hall and City Council meetings. Earlier, we heard from City Attorney Michael Bernard. And to hear the original interviews with the personas non grata, John Fodrill and Michael Cuellar, it's posted online on our website, tpr.org. Up next on The Source, how Haven for Hope is helping their homeless clients who are stuck outside during these cold, freezing nights. Stay tuned. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Winter has arrived in San Antonio, and you know that if you stepped outside during these cold nights. But what if you had to sleep outside or in a car? That's a problem facing the San Antonio homeless population. When it gets extra cold by San Antonio standards, the homeless shelters like Haven for Hope have to work extra hard to provide a warm place to sleep and additional social services. To tell us about that is Haven for Hope spokesperson Evita Mendiola.
Cold weather in Texas is obviously fairly rare, fairly unusual, but when it does happen, people who are living on the streets are not always prepared. They don't necessarily have the layers of blankets or the right just cold weather gear to sustain themselves. And so places like Haven for Hope open their indoor sleeping areas for individuals sleeping on the street to come in and have a warm place to sleep, a warm meal, and some resources.
When you say you're indoors, do you have like an outdoor courtyard that people sleep on during the summertime or something?
Yes, that's correct. We, in just non-inclement weather or non-cold weather, our prospect's courtyard area, which is essentially our emergency shelter arm of Haven for Hope, has between 500 and 600 individuals on any given day spending the night there, and is partially outdoors. A lot of the sleeping happens outdoors. It was initially actually begun that way because we understood that chronic homelessness, in order to get people to seek services, a lot of times it's a transition, a very slow transition. So we wanted to make sure they were comfortable. And for some, they prefer to sleep outdoors. So we had that as an alternative, and a lot of people choose that.
How big is the homeless population in San Antonio that you serve, and then I guess there are people out there who still don't come in even when the conditions get harsh?
That's true. There are two portions of our campus at Haven for Hope, which a lot of people don't really understand. It's a campus, which is a transformational center overcoming homelessness, and then there's the emergency shelter. And there's, on any given day, between 500 and 600 in our emergency shelter. Currently, today, 71 families in our campus. And singles, we have 193 women and 465 men.
Wow.
So it's quite a few people. A total of 707 individuals on our campus sleeping in residential dorms, and then between 500 and 600 sleeping at our emergency shelter.
And children? There are children there as well?
On our campus, we do allow children. We have full families. They have to be accompanied by a guardian. And we have 151 children on our campus today.
Wow. So as I understand it, there, you know, we have the situation with chronic homelessness, and maybe they have other problems like substance abuse and issues. And then we have the transitional homeless people who maybe they were living paycheck to paycheck, and then they lost that paycheck, and now they're trying to get back on their feet.
There is no one definition of a homeless person, obviously, and even that, the term puts an emphasis on the fact that they're homeless. They're individuals like you and me. It can be anyone. It can be my cousin, my friend. Anyone can end up in a homeless situation. I mean, we have infants. I mean, when you think about it, children are just as much part of the homeless population as someone who's had a substance abuse problem, someone with mental health issues, and someone who's just lost their job. We've also gotten a number of individuals who their home has burned down. Their family has kicked them out for any number of reasons, or they're just in an overcrowded condition because they can only afford to live with, you know, a certain amount of family members, but it gets hard, and so they have nowhere to go.
And at Haven for Hope, you have a sort of a campus of services that you can deal with these people at an individual basis and figure out how to help one on that level?
Yes, that's correct. For the Haven for Hope Transformational Campus, We do. Everyone is assigned a case manager, and the interesting thing about the model at Haven for Hope is that we've begun as really a facilitator. Our case managers are hubs for the many partner agencies who have offices on site, so that someone does not need transportation. They don't need funds to seek a number of these services to help them get on their feet, anything from mental health treatment, substance abuse treatment, job skills training, dental, medical. Everything is within our campus and could feasibly be attained that way. And so that really helps overcome so many of the barriers, because anything can land you in homelessness. But once you're here, it's hard to get out because of all of the barriers. You know, who's going to watch my kids, and how am I going to get that job, and how am I going to get there, and all those things. We try and take care of that here so that there are as few barriers as possible to get back into housing.
I know the gravity well is so strong when you end up in that place.
Absolutely. I think the word gravity well is so appropriate to describe the weight that people have when they come here. And I love working here. I love being a part of this mission. And it's about giving people dignity and giving people respect, to see them as people, as an individual who needs help, just like any one of us might in any given day.
Evita Mendiola is a spokesperson for Haven for Hope, which is helping San Antonio's homeless population cope with our current freezing nights. You can find out more information about donations, volunteering, and services online at havenforhope.org. You've been listening to The Source on KSTX. Wayne Coble is the TPR program director. Chris Udaly is our web producer. Paul Flav is in charge of TPR operations. We get production help from Catherine Dixon. I'm David Martin Davies. Check us out online at tpr.org. The Source is a production of KSTX, Texas Public Radio.